Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled. Pixel Sift is proudly supported by Murdoch University School of Arts. At Murdoch University School of Arts, you can study a degree that'll keep up with the fast pace of modern media, and you can learn how to debug a complex audio setup or a live stream, just like we can do now here at Pixel Sift. The course has been designed in consultation with industry and business, and the Bachelor of Creative Media allows you to specialize in sound, graphic design, screen production, photography, or games art and design. Whether you like playing and talking about games, making your own podcast, or using your creative skills to make new things, the Bachelor of Creative Media is broad enough to make you a competitive candidate when heading into the workforce. You can search for Murdoch University and head to the website for more information. Murdoch University School of Arts, proudly supporting Pixel Sift. Hello, my name is Gianni, and welcome to Pixel Sift. If this is the first time that you've ever tuned into the show, welcome. Thank you for coming along. Each fortnight, we dig into the world of games, talking about the issues and topics making the rounds for players and developers, and we chat to the people and the communities who are working hard to make their own games. My co-hosts on this journey today are Sarah and Mitch.
Yeah, contrary to popular belief, Sarah has not stolen my job. Yeah.
Wow. Mitch is still here.
That's not what I was told.
Hasn't been replaced.
You know, my mom was like, "You haven't been on the show in a while. Has Sarah taken your job?"
It's good
and
to know.
I was
know.
Like, "No, mom."
Shout out to your mom watching the show.
Or shout out to Mitch's mom for believing in me more than she believes in him, evidently.
Classic.
Joining us as well this week, we have Trave Duncanson. He's from Melbourne's Atomizer Games, and he'll be telling us all about their stealth noir game, Heist. Trave, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was, pretty good to be here.
Well, we'll be learning all about the game that's been in development for a little while, a little bit later in the show. But Mitch, we've got another topic coming up just before that. What else are we checking out today?
Yeah, we'll also be covering the controversy surrounding the latest Detroit Become Human trailer.
So just a warning, our first topic will be discussing the depiction of domestic violence in that trailer in Detroit Become Human. So if that's something you'd rather not hear, or you've got people around who may not want to hear that, and you're listening as a podcast, you can click the chapter marker in your podcast player and skip directly to our interview with Trave about Heist. Mitch, what's Discord?
Discord is an online chat service that most gamers use. Incidentally, you can also use it to talk to us at pixelsift.com.au/Discord.
Yeah, you can talk about episodes, you can talk about upcoming topics, you can probably even coerce Mitch into playing a game with you online.
That's not going to happen.
That is going to happen. You're doing it. I'm saying that's happening. Sorry.
Yeah, well...
Join Discord.
You should grow your beard back.
pixelsift.com.au/Discord.
I only play Overwatch. So, yeah, if anyone wants to play a game, it's Overwatch.
You got to jump on Discord, as Trave has done this afternoon. clicking the links, getting there. Going to play some Overwatch with Mitch, I assume.
Yep. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah, we can make that up.
Yep.
He's
sounds good.
He's even rocking the shirt today.
I'm rocking the shirt today, yeah, which is good. Anyway, so the latest trailer for PlayStation's Detroit Become Human has included a very confronting and distressing topic, the consequences of serious domestic abuse of a young girl. This has caused some to worry about the impact this might end up having on the people that will eventually play the game.
Now, it has been quite widely reported in mainstream media. A lot of the big outlets like Channel 9, ABC, big traditional media brands have been kind of approaching this and speaking out about this particular depiction. For people who don't know, Detroit Become Human is a game made by Quantic Dream. It's a narrative interactive story, very similar in style to the previous games that you might know called Beyond Two Souls or Heavy Rain. More like an interactive sort of narrative rather than a game as such, as in you're not pressing A to jump, you are pressing A to have a decision.
So like a mature version of those old Goosebumps books, like, you know, the ones that it was like choose your own adventure, but yeah. It's like choose your own, effectively a mature media TV show or a film, but you're just choosing slightly separate pathways, I guess, or slightly different outcomes.
And the purpose of this game is to sort of explore the near future where humanity and androids are in the same world, where robots, and what does that impact have on the way that we behave as people, and what does that impact have on artificial intelligences that also exist and share our world. So one of the depictions in this is in the most recent trailer, which came out at Paris Games Week, shows quite a confronting scene where you, the character Kara, has to interrupt a scene of violence, and the choices you make will have impacts depending on how they work and the timings that you do with those sort of things. So it has attracted a bit of controversy because people have said that the depiction of any violence, especially violence towards children in a game, is something that should not be ever done, and it should be something that shouldn't be shown in games. And that's kind of where the main controversy has come out. So people who work for support groups for people who are escaping domestic violence have criticized the way that this is depicted in games, in this particular game, and have said comments to the effect. So Dr. Glenn Cupid, who is a spokesman when speaking to Channel 9, said that is a spokesman for Australian Council on Children and the Media, said that, "I'm worried that kids are going to be brought up on a diet of entertainment violence." And Cupid, who is a retired psychologist, says that this presents violence against children and violence against women and children together, which is one take on this particular aspect. Assistant Professor Shanti Raman from the National Association of the Prevention of Child Abuse, speaking to the ABC, said, "I think that the depiction itself is actually quite chillingly close. The figures and everything, and although they are animation, are so real, and we deal with children and families who are victims of violence on an almost daily basis. And because I work in child protection, this was very disturbing for me to watch, because it seems to play out how the lives of some of the children that I see," which I think is a fair thing to say. Sorry, Trave.
Yeah, I was going to say, see, the thing is, we don't really know, you know, how much, what is actually depicted. So if we take the trailer at face value, right, say it doesn't really get any more graphic than what is kind of visible there, right? Where it's like, you don't actually see the violence, because, you know, part of the mini game, or, you know, based on what I saw in the trailer, is like, you have to break free from your protocol by mashing buttons, like your halt protocol that like the fathers put you on. And I don't know, like, there could be something where it's like that simple decision in the way the path splits up could be meaning you don't see anything. Like, the violence becomes implied, like any violence against children that happens in movies. It's not shown. If it is, it's really not good. But it's more implied, because, you know, you can't sort of show that stuff. You're not allowed to show that stuff in film either. Mm. So, I mean, the game doesn't necessarily glorify, even show the person what's going on. It's like what happened with South Park. That got censored by Australian our censorship and whatnot. And they rejected it and they sent it back, you know, with the censorship thing on. And that implication kind of, for South Park, you know, everyone said this made it better. The Australian version was the game to play, because how they self-censored to get through Australian classifications was by implying it. And that also kind of works really well in comedy as well as it does in sort of drama and tragedy. So, I mean, I think it's too quick to judge this game on, or, you know, but of course, like, tabloid media is going to do that. But I think it's too quick to judge Quantic for what they've actually got here, because it could be quite well presented and not as tasteless as the mass media is portraying it.
It's interesting you say that, because, I mean, the ABC is one of the outlets who have reported on this particular thing and have taken comment from these experts as well, and they're not ones that would generally be overhyping something for this sort of circumstance. Do you think it is that this is too cursory a glance, and maybe the intention of this trailer is to shock people to get that impact, and that's what people are only seeing?
Oh, definitely. Like, it's definitely playing to that on the marketing end, right? And I remember that reading that was one of the criticisms that was leveled at it, was that it was, you know, the people in the UK were saying that, how dare they do this for a quick buck. I'm not sure if that was like actual quotes or if that was just what the tabloid was saying themselves. But yeah, it's definitely going to shock people to pay attention to this game for its release. So it's definitely doing that. But I don't know. Yeah, again, we don't really know what the game's game's actually going to have the player do, right? And I think some of the way it's being interpreted as well is that, like they're trying to make amusement out of it, and it's like, no, Quantic doesn't do that because these are adult games. They're going to deal with adult themes, and part of being an adult is if you have a parent, this is something that does happen. And trying to, I think, spread some light on it, you know, to an audience that might not be paying attention to these usual sorts of things.
I feel pretty bad. I haven't actually seen the trailer yet, but from what I've heard about it from discussing with you guys and what you've said, it sounds like the entire premise is you as the player character, as this android, are interjecting into the scene and trying to stop this from happening entirely, yep. Trying to shed light on that. And if they do it tastefully, it could be almost an educational tool, because a lot of young people play games. Mm-mm. Now, and I say that, I mean, ideally it should be people over 18 if this game is going to be rated R, because as we all know, R18 is there for a damn good reason. And if that's the case, we're going to have young people playing this. Maybe they're thinking about this. Maybe they've, you know, if they've been through that experience themselves, you'd like to hope that it's, you know, there's an appropriate trigger warning on the case of the game, or there's a good meter around this. But for young, a lot of people that have never experienced this, myself included, it's, you know, it's quite a harsh topic. But if it's dealt with in the right way, it can bring a lot of these issues to light as like, this is something that you need to be aware of, and this is something that you as a person can potentially help, you know.
I think as well with this is, as you said, the depiction of it can be quite confronting, and I think that's correct. You do need to warn people appropriately. Mm. But another aspect of that is it does need to actually make its way through the Australian censorship.
Absolutely.
It hasn't been rated yet in Australia. And if you have a look at Quantic's previous two games, the most recent game was Beyond Two Souls. And that was rated R18 in Australia. And the previous one, which was on the PlayStation 3, is called Heavy Rain, and that was rated MA15. But at the time, there was no R18 rating in Australia.
That did cause us a few issues. We had a lot of games coming in when they probably shouldn't have.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Other games that were potentially, it was a bit of a messed up system.
Right. And so they were both repackaged for the PlayStation 4, and they were given an R18 rating together. So this is not a game that is aimed at children. And I think the interaction is impacting, basically the interaction is there to sort of react to the situation. You are in charge of this violence. You are an observer, and potentially where I think the one criticism can be is that some of the options presented to you might be that in a violent situation, violence may be the action that you are given. And through a lot of evidence that people have heard and have demonstrated that a violent situation, violence is generally not the answer to get out of that situation. It's generally in a power dynamic where you do not have control. And by telling people that they can react violently to get out of a violent situation, that can cause more harm than good. So we don't know at this stage. It is something that we will have to, see how it plays out. But I think the discussion of topics which do give you pause or are confrontational are often a good starting point for us to discuss why these issues are important and to see why we need to think about how this should be approached in society.
I think the fact that everyone that watches it, gamer or non-gamer or journalist or traditional media or whatever, whoever actually watched the trailer comes away from that trailer not feeling good and it actually feeling quite scared and not comfortable. And I think that goes against a lot of the arguments that a lot of the mainstream media has been saying. It trivializes domestic violence. And I think if it trivialized it, if you wouldn't feel so terrible after you watch that trailer. I think anybody that's saying that this particular experience trivializes it hasn't watched the trailer and doesn't know anything about it.
I think going to be firmly a game that's targeted at adults for a mature audience. There are people in our society, unfortunately, who do have to deal with this on a daily basis, and you know, it's appropriate that the people who do have to deal with this are appropriately warned. Now, Mitch, you've got
one
some
other thing.
Oh, sorry, Trey, go for it.
Sorry, I was going to say one other thing. I think that it could be good for, and hopefully it does do if it's again done tastefully, is that people that might not be experiencing the abuse themselves, they might learn to see the signs for other people in their friendship circles, and maybe learn what to look out for by seeing it sort of more firsthand, but in a safe and distant way as you can in a video game, but you can still, you know, objectively see it.
And then you can go onto the resources that are available for people who can support you and make a safe exit from that situation. Now, Mitch, you've got some resources for people who, if they're in Australia.
Yes. So I have a couple of family domestic violence assistance services that I have on my screen right now when it comes up. It is these are Australian. So it's 1-800-737-732. That is the Respect National Helpline. There's the Women's Crisis Line, which is 1-800-811-811, and Lifeline, which is 131-114. So if you require any assistance or you feel like you need help, these are some places which you can go to get it. And these will all be in the description below this episode.
That's it for this one. So now let's just jump into our next topic.
Pixel Sift.
Pixel Sift.
No, seriously, Pixel Sift. No, seriously.
Pixel Sift.
If you've just joined us, we're joined by Trave Duncanson. He's a designer at Melbourne's Atomizers game, developer of the upcoming stealth noir game Heist. Now, Trave, what is Heist?
So Heist is a noir cat burglar game where you use non-lethal gadgets to get in, get the loot, and get out again. So it's a very pure stealth game in the sense it's all about avoiding and evading as opposed to going in there, shooting up the place.
So why did you want to go for a stealth game where you need to avoid conflict rather than, you know, some of the other stealth games that have been popularized recently where combat is an important part of that game?
I was playing Dishonored a few years back, and one of the things, because I hadn't played a lot of stealth games, but one thing that I did recognize was that there was always a violent option there in the stealth game. And I was just thinking about it and going, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have that sort of dynamic, stealth is about not being seen, and the fact is that most people, when they're really into the stealth games, they go for non-violent runs. And it's when you're making a game, you have to add all these things, and then you might remove some stuff, but you still have to add everything in. And adding the ability to kill a guard or whatever, or violently get rid of an obstacle, you have to put that in there. So it's easy to just not put it in there. And then from there, sort of try and recognize, okay, now that we're missing an element and people are going to notice that missing, we need to put something else in there to sort of, fill that interactive element that is now a void.
What I always thought about, which is hilarious about stealth games, is that by introducing violence, you've immediately escalated the level of danger. And I think that if you are a cat burglar in the traditional sense of the word, most of the time, if you get in and escape and steal the prize or the jewelry or whatever, a lot of the time the impact on you will be much less, obviously, because you haven't caused violence to someone else and now you're a violent break-and-ender offender sort of thing. Do you think that's an important aspect to it as well, that it kind of does break that immersion by adding all these things where you can just get away scot-free by punching or shooting your way out of a situation?
I think in a way, yeah. It waters down the experience, I think, of stealth gameplay and what makes it special. But I also find that being a cat burglar, the whole challenge is to be a ghost, to be something that basically no one ever sees, hears, or anything. It's you might as well be walking through the walls, and that adds mystery. And I think it was just a fun idea to explore, how do you get the player to feel that cool and whatnot. In the game, there is still a little bit of violence in the sense that, you can be shot from afar by a guard, right? You're running away, they see you, they try and take you out so they can catch you. There's a little bit of violence still in the game. But yeah, it was just it doesn't make sense for a cat burglar, because once we decided that there wasn't going to be violence in the game, we had to think of what kind of person's going to be sneaky but not gonna kill at all. And cat burglar just seemed to make sense. You don't want to be leaving a trail of bodies behind you. You want to just be quiet and unnoticed.
So when did you decide that you didn't want violence in the game? Was that how late in the development process was it?
It was immediate. It was part of the pitch from I wanted to try and figure out what would make that game still fun, a stealth game still fun, if you didn't have the cathartic killing, because that's what it ends up being, right? Is if the stealth gets too hard, you've got a cathartic release by being able to kill a bunch of people and then reset and then go again. We didn't really have that, so we had to sort of approach what the fun element, I guess, of the game was from a completely different direction, if that makes sense. And that's where we came in with the tool. So it was, yeah, so to answer your question more directly, is yeah, absolutely, it was there from day one.
How have you built out the game of Heist? If you look at the game, people might be watching on Twitch right now, they can see a bit of the gameplay. They can see that it's quite a stylized world. But what are some of the important things you do to kind of communicate that stealth and make it so that you're not just in blackness all the time and make it a playable experience for people?
Well, So the lighting is obviously, you know, pretty obvious as something, you know, different about the game. You know, that sort of cell shaded look, and you'll see like you know, sort of three bands of lighting: the dark, the mid tone, and then like the fully lit. And we kind of knew we wanted to go for a cell shaded style early on, and it kind of just, hey, this is a nice way, a little bit inspired by Mark of the Ninja, where it's got, you know, just a binary stealth system, as they said, where like you either visible or not visible. And you know, kind of wanted that, and as I was looking at cell shading, I liked that sort of gray strip. It added a bit more of a graphic novel look to everything, and I was like, okay, well, I mean, you know, what if I can do the same sort of thing where you've got like more discreet stealth as opposed to your soft fall off lighting, such as like Thief, where it's like you know there's a much more higher dynamic range, I guess. That was pretty obvious, where we're like, okay, cool, that's what the lighting is going to be. You're going to be partially visible, so if you're not moving or you're up against cover, you'll be practically invisible. In shadow, you're invisible, and then in light, you'll always be spotted. And again, following on, like, okay, we're presenting the game in a graphic novel style. What can we use from that style instead of using your classic UI? So the outline on the player changes tint, you know, according with the lighting as well, to help communicate that, in case you weren't too aware that moving in those different areas was having an effect on your visibility. And then, you know, trying to visualize sound was a big thing as well. And eventually got this idea of having like these sonar waves that emanate out. So the thing we're trying to do all the time with it is, you know, lean really heavily on the graphic novel style to help communicate the stealth mechanics that were going on in the game.
I got a question here from SQDJ. You mentioned that you getting shot is a consequence, but what else can happen if you get caught?
Present evidence.
And goodbye, everyone. Thanks for coming to Pixel 6. Yeah. Good episode.
Yeah, no, the Ace Attorney, like, you know, minigame at the end is awesome. that doesn't exist, but that would be a cool thing. Basically, it's pretty simple. Like, you either get shot or you get, like, tackled to the ground, and then once you're nabbed, you have the option to, you know, start again. Let's just say you broke out of jail after being caught,
and you go back to the scene of the crime, as all great criminals do.
It's just more guards this time.
Classic
noir
trope.
Now, you've spoken about a bit of inspiration there from other works. You talked a bit about Dishonored, and you've mentioned Thief is there. What are some of the things that, what other games that you did kind of pull inspiration from, and what were some of the things that you wanted to do differently than some of the other stealth games that people might be familiar with, I guess, other than sort of a violent situation, you know, in your Metal Gear Solid sort of thing?
Yeah, so that's the interesting thing is, like, you know, I didn't play a whole heap of stealth games sort of growing up and whatnot. I wouldn't say I'm, you know, exactly a stealth game fan. You know, I do have, you know, other games that I play a lot more of. But I, you know, as I said, I did play Dishonored, and I really, really liked that game. It made me think a lot of, like, you know, Bioshock, you know, remind me a lot of that. So I was kind of like really interested in that sort of thing. And at first I thought Dishonored was going to be open world, and I was super psyched about that. And then it wasn't, and I was like, oh, that kind of sucks. But I definitely have, you know, some sort of fond memories of Metal Gear Solid, where it was a game on your PlayStation. I couldn't really understand how to play the game. I had no idea what was going on, because, you know, I was pretty young at the time. But my brother is 9 years older than me. I remember him playing it and seeing him stealth around, avoid, knock out the guards, and, you know, all that kind of cool stuff. And so, like, I think that is what I definitely drew from in terms of, like, how I wanted to visually present the game without, you know, sort of top-down camera, but without, you know, going back and looking at it. Like, you know, I didn't want the static cinematic camera angle stuff, you know. I wanted a bit more of an arcadey thing, I guess. So a bit of distinction there, but, like, I definitely, you know, was thinking back on, you know, all the stealth games that I had experience with, which wasn't a lot. And so the only other stealth game really that I'd say I'm a huge fan of is Hitman. I actually love Hitman so much. And, you know, drew a lot of ideas from, like, how, you know, because Hitman, I guess, in a way, it does have, like, an arcadey feel, right? Like, if you've played Blood Money, there's, like, a story about that's going on that's, you know, a journalist telling an FBI agent or something, FBI agent telling a journalist a whole bunch of details about these Agent 47 cases. And I kind of liked how that story was connecting these all the hits and stuff that was going on. But when you got into the game, it was very arcadey. It was very sort of contained. It was all about the hit. And, you know, and the game just said, all right, do it the way you want, sort of thing, and let you sort of experiment in, like, these, you know, micro open worlds, if you will. You know, Dishonored did the same thing, you know, to a point as well. So a bit of love for that as well. But yeah, no, Hitman, that sort of arcadey feel is what I really liked, and thought, okay, I want to have something similar to that, where, you know, there's different ways you can go about, which you know, different tools will perform better in certain areas. So you can sort of, like, figure out the path you want to take that best suits your, like, suite of tools to steal the loot and then get out again. So, you know, like Hitman, there's one, well, there's not always one target, but, you know, there's, like, a minimal number of targets, as opposed to Thief, where it's like, all right, I'm just going to grab everything that's not bolted down.
It's interesting that Metal Gear Solid and Hitman are brought up, partly because I suck at both of them horrendously. I loaded into Metal Gear Solid 5, or the prologue to 5, and the first thing that happened was I heard, this is a stealth mission, and then suddenly I got spotted. Didn't go well. But, like, they're very different to kind of what you're doing, in the sense that a lot of those you end up, and same with Hitman, I found when I tried playing through Hitman, I ended up alerting people all the time, and I just kind of went to roll with it. Dishonored a bit too, and I love Dishonored. I mostly went for stealth in that, though. But, like, I found yours heist was so interesting because it kind of took away that, and it was all about you completely avoiding everyone, but it wasn't, like, a chore to avoid guards. In other games, I found that it can get kind of frustrating. It's just like, oh, I got spotted again. But in heist, it kind of became part of this nice rhythm of, all right, duck and run, hide, then slide along this wall and stuff. How has the reception been to that? I know you did display the game at PAX, and the booth looked pretty busy most of the time. I was really drawn to it. How have other people kind of responded to that? Maybe if they've never touched a stealth game, or maybe if they play heaps of them before.
Well, that's the thing that I think I found really interesting. You know, like, a lot of people have said before me, you know, that, like, you know, stealth games are basically puzzle games. And I think that's something we sort of are leaning on a little bit, where it's like, you know, puzzles are interesting even when there's nothing happening. And I think that's something, you know, we've definitely thought about a lot in terms of how to do the levels. So the levels, as you traverse through them, are, you know, sort of like understanding the configurations of guards and walls and when to use a tool and whatnot. But, like, honestly, you know, I think because of that, it has allowed, you know, a lot of different people, I guess, to play the game that might not normally play the game, you know, because it's not a game about reaction time. Like, there definitely are tools that help with that, or a bit more based around that, like, you know, the cherry bomb or the coin. Being able to react quickly as a guard moves around a corner, throw the coin at a perfect angle, and stuff like that. But, you know, it is a slow game. It's a game about thinking, thinking forward, and there's a lot of ability for you just to sort of sit there, look, figure out how and when you're going to make your move. And I think because of that sort of slower pace, it's being able to draw in a lot of different people. Now, we definitely know what, you know, what our sort of audience is. You know, it's definitely, like, older, you know, like, I guess more old school gamers, right? You know, like, they're in their 30s, 40s and stuff now, and maybe don't have a lot of time to play games generally. But, you know, as the age of the medium of, you know, gamers' age moves upwards, I guess that's always going to be the case. Time is more valuable and you have less of it. So, I don't know, I guess, yeah, we get a really good mix of people. It's not definitely, like, all leaning to one side, you know, like, that's, you know, well, I explained, like, that's what our target market is. That's, you know, the majority, but that majority is, like, you know, 40%, I would say. You know, there's a good age range and good amount of diversity of people that are interested in the game, which is really good. And I think, yeah, that's attributed to the puzzle, like, elements of it, not the action, because there isn't a lot of action when you take out guns effectively.
Now, Trey, you've been working on this game for a little while now. When can people expect to have a go at playing the game? How close are you to release?
We're really, really hoping we can get it out in the first half of next year. Mm-hmm. That's what we're pushing really hard for. So, if you want to follow things as it goes on, we'll be like, you can find us on Twitter at Heist the Game to follow more updates, as well as we've got a Steam community hub with going on there where you can people are more than welcome to ask questions.
Jump in there. We'll stick links up to that in the description of this episode as well. So if you want to find out more about Heist and Atomizer Games and you want to follow Trave on Twitter, you can. You'll find all those links on there. Trave, look, it sounds really interesting. I can't wait to play it when it's out in the real world. I'm a real sucker for stealth games. I've played many of them, and I think played the original Metal Gear Solid and was probably a little bit too young for it and was dying repeatedly, and as I've come back to it, I really enjoy that experience. But I also have that same experience where I now don't have as much time as I would like to play for games. So hopefully this ticks all the boxes in that area. Now, we have reached the end of the show. That's all we've got time for today. Thank you very much for joining us, and thank you to our sponsor, Murdoch University School of Arts.
You almost forgot the sponsor.
I was like, School of Arts at Murdoch. Anyway,
they're not going to give us any more money.
They are very important to us, Murdoch University School of Arts. Thank you for sponsoring the show. As we mentioned at the end of the first topic, if you have any concerns about the depiction of domestic violence, you can call 1-800-RESPECT or call Lifeline on 131-114. If we want to listen to some of our older episodes, you can do that as well. You can find them on our website. Our website is www.pixelsift.com.au, where you will be able to, look at all the old episodes. You know, I've put a lot of time into that website. So
yeah, we're also hanging out on Discord all the time.
Yes.
At pixelsift.com.au/Discord.
Yep. And you can ask Mitch to play Overwatch with you, or maybe Fortnite.
I'm more
into
Fortnite now.
Yeah, don't worry about Overwatch. Yeah.
Yep. It's free on PS4. Just go get it.
And
no excuse.
You can jump on there. Now, Sarah, we've got a whole bunch of other stuff, including a bunch of our PAX content where you actually talk to the team at Atomizer Games about Heist. Whereabouts can people find that if they want to find out all of that stuff or
well,
watch it?
We are on a number of different websites, as a matter of fact. We're on facebook.com/pixelsift, twitter.com/pixelsift, twitch.tv/pixelsift, and youtube.com/pixelsiftau.
That's it. This is our last live episode for 2017. We'll have another episode. We're bringing you Perth Games Fest next week, and we will have our first episode when, Mitch, in the year 2018.
Yes, so we'll be back on the 4th of January. So, see you there. Yep.
Trave, thanks for joining us.
No worries, thank you.
And we're looking forward to playing your game. For now, though, we'll see you, I don't know, sometime in the future, maybe on Overwatch.
Merry Christmas.
See you then. Bye.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. At sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.